from the island of Corfu and brought to you on Amazing Affiliates, Max Sports Channels, Talk Superstation, Armed Forces Radio, BaseballPodcast.net, First Online Radio, Cosmic Radio, and WRFN 1025. This is The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. Man, I am happy to have you here today. We're going to talk a little baseball. Today is all about baseball. Later on today, Oakland A's, baseball with Athletics Nation, lead writer Alex Hall. And then we're going to kick off our fantasy baseball coverage with Fox Sport Detroit's own Dennis Farrell. But up first, to talk a little New York Mets hot stove baseball, please welcome from bloggingbets.com, my friend, Mark Berman. Mark, how are you? Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you very much. How's everything going over there in New York? Is it cold yet?
It is cold. Apparently, it's going to get down to 7 degrees on Friday, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, I'm sure you are. When are you going to go back to California?
The 8th.
Oh, my God.
Same day as the Hall of Fame announcement.
That's right. The Hall of Fame announcement is the 8th of January. I'm interested, actually, to see how that's going to all come down, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, so am I. I mean, you know, we all hope Piazza gets in, but I just don't think it's going to happen this year.
No, I don't think – I think the writers are going to keep him out as long as they can.
I think he'll get in – because he got 57% last year. He'll get 63% this year, and then he'll get in next year is my guess.
Well, we hope, anyway. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see. You know what? If he gets in, he gets in. If he doesn't, we know why.
Oh, yeah.
Because it certainly isn't what he did on the field. But, you know, it's New Year's. And people make New Year's resolutions. And I didn't.
Me either.
I don't know if you do. Do you do that?
Nope.
Nah, I don't bother with it. I have a plan and I stick with it. I don't need to change it with resolutions.
Exactly.
And foolishness. But the New York Mets, we should give them some, right? What would you... If you were going to make a New Year's resolution for the New York Mets, what would it be?
You know, my first resolution would be that to try to make sure that Travis d'Arnaud has a big year. I think every year there's one player who's the key to the offense, and this year I think it's going to be d'Arnaud. Because Murphy, Wright, Granderson, and Young are all going to hit. Chris Young are all going to hit. So, and that's half the lineup. So other half of your lineup is a big question mark. So d'Arnaud needs to hit, needs to show that he was worth the trade for Dickey, and he's going to be the key to the lineup this year. So they have to resolve to somehow get him to have a good year.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I hope that happens. I like that resolution. I really do. You know what I would like to see the New York Mets, if they were going to make a resolution,
what?
Is to actually come up with an organizational way. Like you and I've talked about 1,000 times, the Cardinals way. Mm-hmm. Come up with something that's uniform throughout the organization so every person who walks through Port St. Lucie for the first time is indoctrinated into what they would call the Mets way. This is how we do things on the field. This is how we do things off the field. This is what's expected of you. And if you don't do it, you're out. Because there is no Mets way that I can tell. And I would love to see them build that from the ground up and have an organization similar to the St. Louis Cardinals.
That would be nice. You know, I think they're starting to have a certain way about the way they operate, but it's not a good way, and it's the wrong way. For example, all the pitchers who have to pitch X amount of innings before they can come up to the majors, I think is the wrong way to go. But it's becoming the Mets way. I mean, they did it with Harvey and Wheeler. They're going to do with Syndergaard and Montero. So I think they are trying to come up. Maybe they'll come up with some other things, but that resolution, I think, is starting to become a reality.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't trust the organization. The Mets way normally is to trash them on the way out.
I was just going to say that, and that is the Mets way to trash them on the way out. Another Mets way is to have some reason have poor medical care which they don't they never seem to address. I mean, they changed something a couple of years ago, but they still go with the same hospital for special services, and they have the same medical team, I think, and I don't know.
It's nutty, though. Can you think of anything else you'd like to see the New York Mets try to do going forward that they don't do now?
Good question. Well, as I alluded to before, I wish they would bring up prospects earlier and not wait till they pitch X amount of innings in the majors. I would like to see them start Syndergaard or Montero in the rotation this year if they blow away everyone in spring training. I mean, that's what spring training is for. It's auditioning. And if a guy shows that he's ready to go, put him in the lineup. Put him in the rotation.
I like that resolution. In fact, mine is quite similar to that. And it's this. Don't worry about that extra year of arbitration and holding guys back. It does no good. Look what they do. They cost themselves time because these guys are getting hurt anyway.
Yeah.
And get them up there. If they're ready to go, like you said, get them up there. Forget about that extra year on the contract before they can become a free agent or extra year before they're eligible for arbitration. I don't want to hear that mess anymore. If that 19 or 20-year-old is ready to go, by all means, get them up there and get it done. That's the future of the baseball team. Noah Syndergaard is not helping the New York Mets pitch in Double A or Triple A.
Yeah, why waste pitching in the minors? Why? I think someone says, you know, why have him have minor league strikeouts? Put him on the major league roster. And the other thing is, if a guy's going to be that good, you're going to end up giving him a contract to buy out his arbitration and early free agency years anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter to me. Yeah. I mean, I would pull him up right away.
Yeah,
I would have had Harvey up there sooner. I don't know if I would have had Wheeler up sooner. I would have had Wheeler start the season, though, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But there were people talking about bringing him up this season before, and that may or may not have been a bad idea. But honestly, if they're ready to go, by all means, go.
Yeah. I mean,
find out if they can pitch instead of sitting around and building up expectations for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, as I've said in the past, Dwight Gooden went from single A to the majors because he was ready to go.
Henry went up the same way.
Yeah, but he wasn't ready, unfortunately.
He was ready. His problem is his arm wasn't ready.
Yeah, and the other problem is he was always a starter, and then suddenly they made him a reliever. So he just can't change roles like that. He went from, you know, going through his system every 5 days to suddenly have to pitch every day, and he couldn't do that. It's harder. It's not easy to make that switch. And the Mets did it with someone who was 19 years old who'd never relieved before. So that was just kind of a bad idea.
Yeah, maybe so. That was Henry Mejia.
Yeah.
I couldn't get that out.
That's all right.
Because I guess it really doesn't matter because I don't count on him to do much. Now, if you were going to have baseball make some New Year's resolutions, what would you have baseball do, specifically the National League?
You know, they have to come up with some resolution to the DH situation. I mean, I don't like the DH, but you have interleague play every day, and the two leagues playing by the same rules just is not working out. It puts the National League at a huge disadvantage when they play, because in the American League Park, they have to add a fourth outfielder as a DH while the other team has, you know, David Ortiz as a DH. So they need to resolve that one way or the other, either add the DH to the National League or get rid of it in the American League. It's just playing by two rules doesn't work anymore.
I don't like that DH rule.
I don't like it either.
Doesn't seem like it's real baseball, but and that's a big issue. I agree with you. That's a resolution worth keeping right there, and at least trying to make. You know what I would like to see baseball do? Is stop rewarding these cheaters by giving them mega contracts.
Yes.
After they've been caught. What are you trying to, what message are you sending? 50 games is nothing if I can get $64 million, $54 million for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. Who wouldn't? Only a fool would do that,
yeah.
Would not do it.
Yeah. I actually wrote a post about that month ago or something about increasing penalties. And one of the things to do is if you get caught, you still get the 50-game suspension, but you also lose all your major league service time. So once you come back, you start at year one. So the team, you know, so the team can just renew you at anything you want, and you have to wait 3 years for arbitration and three more years for free agency. So you're going to lose tens of millions of dollars. So that would be a deterrent.
I think that would be a deterrent for sure. You know, I would like to see the one and gone deal, but then again, you know what? If you make a mistake, there's a difference, you know?
Yeah.
Accidental overdose or accidental usage as opposed to intentional usage.
Right. Yeah, there are people who do it accidentally and take a supplement they're not supposed to. But in the same token, there's a medical team for that. And if you want to take something, you should always ask the team first or go to the league and say, can I take this? There's things in place to do that. You shouldn't be just walking into GNC and buying something and taking it. You have dozens of people at your disposal to ask if you should take it or not.
And there's a list, you know. Yeah. They get provided a list. The tennis people, the same. All these over-the-counter medications, supplements, whatever. Mm-hmm. They let you know right up front what it is.
Yeah.
This you shouldn't take. This you shouldn't take. This you shouldn't take. Like in the case with Marlon Byrd, his was accidental. Then you've got these other guys who have ADD or dyslexia or some other thing where they have to take something for it. And that's coming up positive too. So I can see maybe why they can't kick these guys out forever. Mm-hmm. But taking away their service would be good because you would kill their pension too.
Oh, no. You know what? I should explain that. It wouldn't be service time for a pension. I don't think that would be fair. But it would be service time for free agency and arbitration. Because, you know, every player waits to be eligible. And if you have to go back to square one, that's going to be a huge deterrent. And if you're already if you're already in the middle of a big contract, the team has a right to void it.
Now that's the other thing; they should be able to avoid it. But you know, the thing is that a lot of teams wouldn't do that. They may just run out the contract, but they're not going to void it out and lose the service of the player. If you look at Texas, they brought Nelson Cruz back. Detroit brought Johnny Peralta back. Now San Francisco, in 2012, didn't bring that knucklehead Melky Cabrera back, and that was a very good signal to baseball. Mm-hmm. Hey, we don't want this cheater there. But so many of these other guys, they bring them back, and something's got to be done, because when you're a kid and you're watching this and you're going, okay, 50 games for $54 million? Mm-hmm. No problem.
Absolutely. But you see, under my plan, the team would regain control of you as if you're a first-year player. So in Ryan Braun's case, let's say, Milwaukee could cancel his contract, and then he's suddenly under their control for six more years. So they could sign him for next year at $500,000.
Well, that's a very good plan.
Yeah, there's no reason not to cancel the contract because you still retain rights over the player.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, I think it's the only plan that would work.
Other than lifetime bans on the first time, this is the best one.
I think so.
This is actually worse.
It is.
Because you're going to cost the guy a lot of money.
Right. He's going to play as if he's, you know, a rookie for the most part.
Right. And he would not, yeah. And then they'd pay him like a rookie.
Yeah. Oh, I've got ideas, my friend.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And this was a very good one. Do you have any other ideas in the 2 minutes we have remaining?
For steroids or just in general?
Or just in general for baseball, what would you like to see them change if you had the opportunity to do so?
Well, getting rid of Bud Selig is a good thing, and he'll be gone. When does he leave? Is it the end of next season?
Yeah, I think he leaves the end of next season.
Well, that's going to help.
You don't like Bud, eh?
I do not like Bud. That's going to help a lot because he's a bad guy. I really do. Oh, here's something. I would like to see Pete Rose be eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Ooh. Okay.
Because I think a lot about that. I mean, what he did, you know, obviously is against the rules and it should be against the rules. But what he did, he was done as a player when he did that. He was a manager. So he can be banned from managing, which is fine, but he didn't do it as a player. So it's not fair to ban him from the Hall of Fame as a player.
Okay, how do you know he didn't do it as a player?
Well, we don't, and he probably did gamble as a player, but there's been no, that's not what the evidence was, and that's not what his case was about. If they want to reopen his case and find evidence of his gambling as a player, fine, but I don't think they're going to do that. But I think at this point, he didn't do it as a player, so why is he banned from the Hall of Fame as a player?
Because he's been kicked out of baseball, period. It doesn't matter. Even if you're a commissioner or whatever, you've been kicked out of baseball, you get a lifetime ban. He can't be in the Hall.
Right, and I think, yeah, I understand that. But what would have happened if he was in the Hall of Fame and then they found out?
He would still be active.
Oh, no. I mean, if he was elected to the Hall of Fame and then was a manager and then years later they found out he was gambling, they wouldn't have removed him from the Hall of Fame.
No, probably not, no.
So I
he wasn't banned from baseball at the time.
Right. I just think he should be in.
Okay, cool. Great stuff today, Mark. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, and we'll see you next week.
Cool.
All right, that was Mark Berman. You can find him over at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Fox Sports Detroit fantasy baseball expert Dennis Farrell will be here to talk fantasy baseball. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Really good, dude.
Oh, no problem.
That was simple. Yeah. We could have really got into this one.
Yeah.
That debate on Pete Rose.
Yeah.
I love Pete Rose.
You too.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Talk Superstation. Season's greetings.
This is Phil Nasons of The Phil Nason Show. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from the Superstation of Talk, TalkSuperstation.com.
Happy Holidays from TalkSuperstation.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody
get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends, and in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hey. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Dennis Farrell is actually at the NHL Winter Classic, and he's in a press conference, and he was unable to be here, so I will pick up the remaining time at the end of the show. Alex Hall is here from AthleticsNation.com. Welcome to the show, Alex. How are you, man?
2014 is going to be a good year, Phil.
I hope so, because 2013 is not ending well.
It's been all right.
It's been all right. You know what? The last 48 hours haven't, but outside of that, 2013 was fantastic. You know what? We talked a little bit about this in the first segment. What do you think about the DH? Because you're predominantly an American League guy, where I'm probably more of a National League guy, although I grew up watching both, really. What do you think about the DH?
Well, this debate comes up at least once every year, and you got to understand, I'm coming from it from two places. I'm under 30, and I've rooted for an American League team my entire life. So to me, the DH is just kind of the way things are done. It's the normal thing. I didn't grow up in a world where it didn't exist and was then added in. So it's normal for me. So yeah, I like it. But when I look at it overall, what it is, that the pitcher hitting, it's got this certain traditional and a purity to it. It's every player on the field playing both sides of the ball. And I get that. I get why that is important to some people. But when I look back through the history of the game and also of other sports, changes are just inevitable. It's a thing that has to come. You look at something like football. Well, they are going through all kinds of changes in their safety rules and trying to keep the players from getting hurt all the time and getting the quarterbacks hurt. In basketball, you have changes throughout its history. You add in a three-point line. You add in a shot clock to speed the game up. You take out hand-checking and call that as fouls and clean up the contact a little bit. In hockey, they've added rules in the last 10 or 15 years, speed up the game, take out ties, increase scoring. This is just the way things go. Just because it's a way that we used to do something doesn't mean it's the best way. And if you didn't used to do it this way, if you started fresh today, is this the way you would do it? It's okay to alter and improve as time goes on. So I look at the arguments on both sides of this, and I got to say, I don't enjoy watching the pitcher hit. I get that it's been a long part of the game's history, but to me, it's just the worst part of the game. It kills a rally, or it removes a pitcher from a game when maybe he could have gone for another inning or two. And it doesn't add anything to the game for me having the pitcher hit. I appreciate having another good hitter in the lineup, having another good hitter in the league. It just doesn't bother me.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if it bothers me so much as it the lack of uniformity in the major leagues is probably what bothers me more. If they're going to have it, and all those examples that you cited about progress and change, absolutely spot on. But those were universal and across the board. The DH is an American League thing, not a National League thing. Shouldn't this be a baseball thing? And it should be one way or the other. I don't care which way they go. I prefer to see pitchers hit. You know, the funny thing about this pitcher stuff, Alex, is most of these pitchers, I wouldn't say most, all of them probably, batted cleanup in high school or college and were their best hitters and probably the best athletes on their team, or one of them. At least in high school, they were probably the best, obviously. So I don't think that hitting is a foreign thing for these guys. And I honestly think if you ask them, they want to go up there and take a few whacks. When you see the American League guys in batting practice before they play a National League team in a National League park, they get pretty excited to get up there and, you know, and throw the wood at the ball. So I think they would like to hit. I don't know, you know, but honestly, for me, there's so many things about a pitcher batting. You know, it's like he's a two-way player like everyone else. He's not like the all-time pitcher. If you played ball at all in the sandlots, You get that when there was an uneven thing, you get that all-time pitcher or all-time catcher or whoever. And it just seems like that to me more. I don't know, man.
Well, and granted, a lot of these guys were fantastic hitters in college, but that's the thing. They were fantastic hitters in college. Then they got to the pros, and they put all of their focus and time and energy into working on pitching, which is the thing that they're there to work on. It's the specialized task that they are being paid for. It's already very difficult to become a good pitcher. And if you have to split your attention between also trying to work on hitting, it's not going to work. So they don't work on hitting that much. I'm sure they do a little bit, but not nearly as much as you need to be a successful major league hitter. So yeah, they were good hitters back then, but they weren't facing professional breaking balls and 100-mile-an-hour fastballs coming out of the bullpen. So they were good, and they're not anymore. Just like there were probably some hitters and shortstops and outfielders who used to pitch a little bit in college, and they probably couldn't cut it as pitchers in the majors today because they haven't been honing that craft and developing and hitting, or well, in the case of pitchers, hitting every day. If you don't hit every day, think about when a player goes on the DL and he comes back 2 weeks later and it takes him a couple of days to get back. That's because it takes you time to get back in your rhythm and get your timing back. You're almost setting them up for failure by sending them up there once every 5 days to take a couple of hacks. So it takes away from the job the pitcher is there to do. And yeah, there is that extra chance that the guy is going to get hurt, not because he's doing something athletic, but because he's doing something he's not used to doing overall. He's not training to run the bases and twist his torso with a swing and these kinds of things and slide into second. These aren't the things that the pitcher probably works on a lot of the time, like a second baseman might work on those a lot of the time because he's hitting every day. So I don't like taking them out of that zone where they're doing the thing that they're there to do. And I know a lot of people disagree with that. And there are arguments against this. The big one being the strategy side of things, where the National League teams have to employ all of these double switches when they want to take the pitcher out and move the pitcher's batting spot to another part of the lineup that's not coming up for another couple of innings. Well, yeah, the double switch is an extra thing that gets added in when the pitcher has to hit. But what I object to is the concept that that is a huge piece of strategy that costs a lot of brain power. It has become a by the book kind of thing, just like everything else, just like when to bring in your closer, just like when to pinch hit or how to construct your batting lineup. These are conventional wisdom now. I don't think there's necessarily a lot of critical creative thought going into the double switch. I think it's pretty clear when and how to do it. You do it after this particular inning in this particular situation, and you take out this particular type of player on the other side of the double switch. There's not a lot of extra thought going into that. But even if you do want to get extra strategy points for that, what about the other side, the American League side? How do you use your DH? Another argument I hear is how all this does is add a bunch of big lumbering sluggers who couldn't possibly play both sides of the ball. Well, when I look at reality, what I see is there were four players last year who qualified for the batting title as DHs, as in they got at least 500 plate appearances as DHs. Four guys out of 15 teams in the American League. So this concept that there are these all offense, no defense, lumbering DH sluggers running around, it's just not a thing. They don't exist. There's four of them, and I'll list them. David Ortiz. Raise your hand if you want David Ortiz out of the league. Nobody raised their hand. He's super exciting. Billy Butler. He's a big fan favorite in his hometown. You've got Kendrys Morales. Well, I don't know. He might actually be able to play first base, except that his team had like six first basemen on the roster, so he had a DH instead. And Victor Martinez. Used to be a catcher, and so he's extending his career. So I'll give you that one. Four guys. The other teams have to figure out how to use the DH because they don't have a David Ortiz who obviously slots in there. So I look at a team like the Oakland A's, like Bob Melvin, who uses that spot to rotate around his other players, keep guys fresh, get a bat in the lineup that he wants in there, but it doesn't fit in the field. So he might put Coco Crisp there for 20 games and keep his legs fresh. He might put Yoenis Cespedes there and let him come back from an injury a little bit faster or give him a break in the field. He might have a guy like Seth Smith who plays 50 games, or he might not. The A's don't really have that guy this year. They have John Jaso, he might get some time because he got so many concussions that he couldn't catch anymore. Well, we'll see if he can still catch, but that has been a rumor going around that he might get a lot of DH time this year. So how do you use that DH spot, and how do you optimize your lineup with it? To me, there's strategy in there, just like there's strategy in a double switch. What about removing your pitcher? In the National League, it's the sixth inning, and the pitcher spot's coming up in a rally. Well, it's pretty obvious. You take him out. He's done. You got to bring in a pinch hitter. What about in the American League? There's never that moment where you have to take out your pitcher or else you're going to ruin the rally. You have to really decide, when is this guy done? Can I bring him out for another inning? Because there's nothing stopping me from doing that except my own judgment on whether or not he's finished. So I just think that there's any set of rules you put in, there's going to be strategies that come with it. And to suggest that there's only strategy in the non-DH side, to me, is a little bit ridiculous, because AL managers also have things to think about. Maybe some of them come before game time when you're writing out your lineup card. But of course, remember, you have to be careful who your DH is, because you cannot put him in the field unless you want to lose that spot. So you have to pick a guy to put in there who you're not going to want to bring into the field later. Hey, there's another thing to think about. The point is, there's complicated thought processes on both sides. And I see a lot of merit to both sides. And to answer your other question, would I like to see it universal? Well, I got to admit, I think it's kind of neat having two sets of rules in different leagues. I hate to have my analysis include the phrase, it's kind of neat, but that's just the way I feel. It's a unique thing that sets baseball apart. All the other sports are universal across the board. Baseball has this quirky, weird thing that just gives it its own personality. Ultimately, yeah, I'd like to make a decision one way or the other. As you can tell, I would like to have the DH in both leagues ultimately, but I'm not in any big rush. I'll go with the way we have it right now. It's worked all right for 40 years. Oh, I can't use that logic. I just said that was bad logic. But hey, keep it like it is. Someday we'll go universal. I'm not in any rush.
You know, I just want them to do something that's consistent on both sides, because it just doesn't make sense to have a DH in the American League and not one in the National League. That's my whole thing with that. I guess I'm always going to be that way, because when I was growing up, there wasn't a DH. I think Paul Molitor was one of the first DHs, and he was a great player. You know, that my first wooden baseball bat was a Paul Molitor signed Adirondack baseball bat with the blue stripe. So I thought he was pretty cool, but it prolonged his career, and it was fun to watch him play, but it was a lot better when he was out in the field, I thought. I like to see pitchers hit. I honestly do. What about a Zambrano who can hit the ball out of the yard and win a baseball game? That's a nice thing.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, you make a good point there. It is super exciting when a pitcher gets a hit, and that's another argument I hear against is, how could you ever want to take that out of the game? I mean, okay, so set up a really, really, really low percentage chance of excitement so that it's extra exciting when it happens. All right, go watch soccer where they score one goal a game. That's super duper exciting then. I don't know. I mean, I'd rather see more exciting things. Let's have it that way. And first off, Paul Molitor, a childhood favorite of mine as well. But as far as extending careers, one other thing I hear about this is that it extends the career of a guy like a David Ortiz or someone else. And, you know, yeah, maybe the DH is extending their career, but I think the real thing extending their career is just this fear of the unknown in baseball, or really, it's fair enough in sports overall. Teams and general managers are going to tend to go for the familiar names, even if the unknown guy has a decent chance of being better. How many jobs does Delmon Young keep getting? Not even as a DH. He was in the National League last year. He would have been one of the big lumbering sluggers everyone was referring to, except, look, he went and played the NL last year. Why does he keep getting signed? Because he's a familiar name and people know who he is. So the DH isn't necessarily extending the career of Lance Berkman or Manny Ramirez or something like that. It's the GM who's too afraid to put another good hitter in that DH slot. I mean, I have a problem blaming the DH on that. The thing extending David Ortiz's career is that he's a fantastic hitter. That's why he keeps getting jobs. Adam Dunn, he does one thing really, really well. And even though he's thought of as a DH, you know, he played 70 games at first base last year. So I'm not that worried. If you're going to extend your career by being good, that's fine with me.
I'll tell you what, speaking of extending one's career, because you and I can talk all day baseball, you and I can, easy. And we might do that today. Raul Ibanez signed a one-year deal with the LA Angels. Now, there's a guy right there who is your prototypical DH slash outfielder. Would I be wrong there?
It is actually humorous to watch him play the outfield. It's actually funny. He's that bad.
Like watching Adam Dunn play first base.
Oh, no, worse. It's like if you got Jack Cuss drunk and then had him play the outfield. That's what it looks like.
No, I like that idea, dude. You know what? This is why you and I get along so well. You know, by the way, Alex, did you know that today is our first anniversary on TalkSuperStation.com?
I did not know that. Happy anniversary.
Yes, January the 1st. If you remember, I do believe you and I were on the air that night, were we? Or did we do on Fridays last year? But that's a special station, man. That was one of the first internet stations that I'd ever actually listened to. And I always wanted to be good enough to get on there. And I'm really lucky that they picked us up. And we've been there for a whole year. So January 1st, hey, thank you very much, TalkSuperStation.com. But anyway, you know what? When you talk about Adam Dunn, now there's a guy who's exciting. He'll hit 50 bombs. But Maron, he strikes out. He's awful. Could you imagine an Adam Dunn playing for the Oakland A's?
Yeah, I mean.
You could. I know you could. You'd probably be happy to have him.
You know? And when I look at Adam Dunn, what I think is when Adam Dunn falls out of the league eventually, it's not going to be because he can't play defense. It's going to be because he can't make contact anymore because he strikes out so much. Like I say, he still plays the field quite a bit. He played almost half the season in the field last year. Not very well, but he still does something really well on a baseball field. So I guess what I look at is, would I rather see Adam Dunn, who's really, really good at something and does some really exciting things, or would I rather see an extra specialist relief pitcher at the end of the bullpen or an extra fifth outfielder on the bench who's not really that good at anything but can just hold his own enough to hold down a major league job? Because if you take out the DH and you don't have, say, David Ortiz on that team anymore, that's what you're going to get. You're either going to get an extra pitcher, and he's going to be the worst pitcher on the team by definition because he'll be that extra reliever at the end, or you're just going to get another fifth outfielder or an extra backup shortstop or something like that, someone who probably isn't all that exciting to watch. And don't get me wrong. One cool thing about National League style is that you do get to use your bench quite a bit more. And sometimes that fan favorite player, that exciting little gritty guy, is that last guy on the bench. And it's cool to see him get in the game more and get to do some cool stuff. But you get some of that on some of the American League teams too. The A's use their bench quite a bit. The Rays use their bench quite a bit. The thing that makes you use your bench is not having a bunch of big superstar players. So, yeah, you get to see those guys more, but do you really want more and more and more of those, or do you want to see more of the star players that you paid to see, that you've been thinking about all winter long and that you wrote your whole pregame about? No, you want to see those guys play. You want to see your stars and your best hitters and your David Ortiz. Those are the guys that I want to see, even if it's just Coco Crisp getting the start at DH, so that Craig Gentry can start in center. Fine. I still would rather see Craig Gentry play than some AAA outfielder who's just got the last spot on the roster.
That makes sense. You know, when you talk about but then, you know what, when people go back, we're going to just go back and forth here. With the pitchers batting, though, in the National League, you get to see a lot of bunting and playing for one run. That's a lot of fun. But when you talk about bench people in the National League, If he were in the American League, would he get a chance, he being Billy Hamilton? That kid from Cincinnati can flat out fly. Would he get that opportunity in the American League?
I mean, he's getting the opportunity in the National League, but it's only going to last if he plays well. If it turns out that he can't hit and he can't field, He's not going to play. I don't think he'll – I mean, maybe he himself, as so uniquely game-changing as he is supposed to turn out to be, maybe he could. But do you see a designated pinch runner on other teams? Because I don't think I see that on other NL benches, much less AL benches. So unless it's maybe like a Rule 5 draft pick that had to stay on the – I remember when Sean Figgins was new, the Angels – had him as a Rule 5 and they had to keep him on the roster all year. So that was a special circumstance. So yeah, if Billy Hamilton can hit a little bit and hold his own in the field, yeah, I think he'd be on an AL team because he can play the game. But if it turns out he stinks at everything else and all he can do is steal bases, I question if you will see him continue to be even on the Reds. You got to be able to do more than one thing no matter where you play, unless you're so good at that one thing that it makes up for it, like Adam Dunn with his home runs. And we'll see if Billy Hamilton's speed is enough to keep him in the majors. And if it is, I think it would have kept him in either league because, hey, there's spots for pinch runners in the AL too, whether that's pinch running for your DH or pinch running for your catcher or pinch running for the first baseman who could just barely hold his own in the field, like Adam Dunn.
That makes sense. But this Billy Hamilton, he'll stick. Because he can bunt and he can run. He runs like the wind, dude. And he won a couple baseball games with his wheels for Cincinnati down the stretch when they needed it. Now, this signing, though, of Raul Ibanez for the Angels, that just tells me that the Angels are all in, but they're all in on the old guys. I'll tell you what. Do you think that perhaps the Angels have Geritol as one of their sponsors? Because I'm starting to think that they do.
Entirely possible.
you know what I mean, though?
Hey, I tell you what, that signing scares me only because Ibanez has a history of destroying the A's. Just seems to happen every year, no matter what team he's on, whoever's pitching for Oakland, Ibanez just comes through. It's a little bit annoying. So I don't like seeing him on one of the big division rivals. But I keep coming back to the Angels and looking and saying, when are you guys going to address the real issues on your team? Now, they have a little bit, and that I'm referring to their pitching. So, okay, they've addressed things a little bit. They added those two young pitchers, Santiago and Skaggs. Great, that's a good start, but they have enough money, enough resources. They could have signed one of the big starters, and they still could. They're still Ubaldo Jimenez, and if they want to bring back Irvin Santana or even Bronson Arroyo or something just for a league average reliable guy, they really need to add another starting pitcher. Because they've got five right now, and you really need more than five if you want to have a full rotation for the full season. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to pitch poorly. They've added a little bit to their bullpen, but again, their bullpen was pretty bad last year. And what, they got Joe Smith? Have they really added anything else? I might be forgetting somebody. But once again, they seem to be putting some focus in the lineup, and the lineup was fine, and it will continue to be fine. They've got some superstar players on that side of the ball. But until they shape up their pitching and add a couple more impact arms there, I don't see how they can compete with some of the other heavyweights in the league because they're only playing half the game right now. Now, granted, Jared Weaver missed some time last year. Well, even if we assume that he and CJ Wilson are good for the full year, that's only two-fifths of your rotation. If I'm an Angels fan, then I would rather see the team adding some arms than adding more aging hitters, because that's been a poor strategy for them so far, even though I think Ibanez is a good pickup as a bench guy.
He is, you know, and when you speak of the Angels and all the money that's been given out this year, they were talking about Mike Trout somewhere, and it was really interesting to me. The conversation was how much money that Mike Trout would wind up getting if he were able to sign a contract. And general managers across the board said that they would pay him between $25 and $35 million a year. That's crazy. But when you talk about the Angels and you don't really care for them too much, do you?
No, not.
That's
not
okay. So we'll have a little fun here. Here's their outfield. This is their outfield right now proposed: Cole Calhoun in left, Mike Trout in center, and Josh Hamilton in right. And your old friend, Colin Cowgill. He might be the fourth outfielder over there.
Well, first off, Cole Calhoun is not a well-known name, but I think the Angels are hoping he might be a solid player. So although he's an unknown, he could turn out to be. I don't know that much about him. I do know that he is there intentionally. They think he's going to be at least decent. Of course, Trout is the best player in baseball. But then Hamilton, what are you going to get out of him this year? It seems very unlikely that he will be as bad as he was last year. It's not a stretch to think that he could improve quite a bit, maybe not return to his MVP. In fact, almost certainly not return to his MVP levels, but at least be that impact bat that he was supposed to be and be that solid, productive player that they were paying for. So I'm not going to sit here and assume that guys like Hamilton and Pujols are going to be bad again and are going to miss a bunch of time again. Because if you're not careful, I mean, these guys are all professionals. They're all amazing talents. They're not going to not be working towards coming back. These guys want to come back and be good again. So is it going to be next year? Is it going to be the year after? These guys have got to have another good year in them. Maybe, probably. I don't see why Hamilton couldn't come back and be solid again next year. As for Trout and a future contract, I mean, if Cano just got 10 years and 240, he's going to beat that. If we assume that no one's going over 10 years on a contract, Trout could be the first $300 million man if Kershaw doesn't beat him to it. And frankly, he'll deserve it. He'll be 26, I think, when he's a free agent. So you only have to sign him through his age, you know, mid-30s, age 35, age 36 season. That's not that bad. You're paying the prime rate, but you're getting his prime years, and you're not getting too much of the sharp decline that comes in, that will come in a contract like Cano has or like Prince Fielder has, where it goes through their late 30s or early 40s. You're paying for the decline. You're not paying for Mike Trout's decline if you sign him to a 10-year deal when he hits free agency.
That's true. That's very true. But this is an interesting team. And I think the big thing for the Angels is they're banking on Pujols to come back healthy. And they're banking on a resurgence of David Freese. And I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but that's an interesting team. And it should be interesting to see what they wind up doing. Now, another thing that I want to ask you about before we let you go. And people are hooting on this poor kid, and I don't think they should be. Yasiel Puig was arrested for speeding. Now, people are saying that he's immature and stupid, and he's racing his car real fast. And, well, that's what he's doing. I guess they clocked him going 110 in a 70-mile-an-hour zone down in Florida in Naples. Is this type of stuff that we even need to know about? Because for me, he's just a young fella who's just blowing off some steam.
I think it would be an interesting experiment to go up to all the people who are up in arms about this, go up to them when they were in their early 20s and hand them $40 million and see what kinds of smart things they do. I'm not going to defend doing dumb stuff. I mean, yeah, okay, that's dangerous and it's stupid. Cool. That's what young people do. And I don't want to get too boys will be boys on this, but there is a balance between understanding and respecting the situation and, you know, coming down a bit and saying, hey, this isn't acceptable. We need you to change this behavior, and getting super, I don't know, getting too up in arms about it and moralizing too much and saying, what, you know, anyone who's going to come back with this with, oh, the youth of today and, oh, what is wrong with the world and where are we going? A young guy did something a little bit reckless. Great. Hey, he wasn't drinking and driving. That sounds like a positive spin to me. I mean, who hasn't gotten a car and seen how fast it can go? I don't know. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but I'm not going to sit here and criticize someone for a thing that most of us have probably tried once before. And like you say, we don't know what all of the other young players are doing that they aren't getting caught for. I'm sure they're all doing something reckless and silly. It's a thing that happens. It's not something you need to be happy about or that you need to brush off and not address, but just we need to be careful not to get too sanctimonious about it. It's okay to make a mistake here and there. As long as you learn from it, move on.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And here's a funny one too. Chris Perez now is the Dodger. Those guys are loading up their bullpen over there, man. You got to love the Dodgers. Can you imagine have Billy Beane having their payroll?
I don't even know what he would do. Because remember, Billy Beane, when he actually gets money, he sometimes doesn't know what to do with it. And when he tries to sign big free agent contracts, they don't usually go well. I mean, he signed Eric Chavez, and that one tanked. They signed Jermaine Dye. That didn't go very well. Signed Esteban Loaiza to a three-year deal, and I think he made it about halfway through that contract before he got cut. Even when he goes out and gets some of the old guys, like, you know, when he goes and gets Jason Giambi back for a year, or wouldn't get Mike Piazza. Well, it worked when he got Frank Thomas, but not all these other older guys. They didn't go quite so well. So I wonder if you gave Billy Beane all this money, would he even know what to do with it? Maybe it would just be that he would be good at picking which guys to invest in, because that's all it is at that point, is I have all this money. Which of these players that are either on the market or available through trade do I want to choose to give the money to? If you got the resources, I mean, you may as well, I hate to say it, but you may as well use them. It's tough following a team that doesn't have those resources, but the Dodgers are being smart. And you know what else they're doing? They're investing in their pitching. Okay, it's easy to say when they've got multiple $20 million contracts in their lineup, but they're going for the depth in pitching. They're not just assuming that their top few relievers will be good. They're loading up on everyone else's old, tired-out closers as well, Brian Wilson and Chris Perez, and Brandon League is still there. They're stacking themselves up, and they've got that depth. This is what you do with extra money, is you add depth. So now when a couple of guys get hurt, there's another former closer to come in and take their spot. When one of your starters gets hurt, well, there's another solid option to come in and take over. So, hey, that's how you do it when you have lots of money.
Exactly. I tell you what, great stuff today, Alex. Thank you so much for being on the show and pinch hitting the way you did.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall. You can find him at athleticsnation.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank Mark Berman and Alex Hall for making this a fantastic, fantastic day of baseball. We want to, again, say Happy New Year. Hopefully your 2014 is a smash. We want that for you. And we want to thank Talk Superstation for one year today. Tomorrow night, well, I'm not so sure what we're going to talk about just yet, but I'm sure it'll be something to do with sports. Anyway, until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you. We'll be right back.